welcome. Today, actually, this is quite funny because we're going to do a mixed interview.
Today we're joined by two winemakers here at Barra.
Alessandro Viola from...
Sicily. Alcamo is the west part of Sicily, close to Trapani.
My name is Hannes, originally from Denmark, and has a background as a sommelier and restaurateur and importer in Copenhagen. But almost 6 years ago I changed to make wines in the Ardèche, in the southern part of the Ardèche region in the Rhône Valley. So, as in Sicily, a quite warm region for winemaking, but a really nice region.
Super. Well, we're happy to have you both.
Yeah.
And we're going to start today with Alessandro's...
With Notte di Bianco.
Notte di Bianco from Alessandro
Notte di Bianco is made from Grillo, white grapes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a typical grapes of the west part of Sicily. I don't put the name of the grapes in the label, because for the appellation you have to make a conventional wine, I want to write Grillo, because you can just write the name of the variety if you do Sicily DOC.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's not permitted to put the name of the grapes inside. It's a crazy law for me, but... it's okay, but my customer know, my client know that I make the wine with the Grillo. It's okay.
Yeah. They can Google it.
Yeah,
it's all right.
This kind of wine you don't choose in a supermarket. Just
the positive thing of that is that maybe for the people that do shop in supermarkets that know Grillo to be a particular style or to tick a certain box, if they saw Grillo on this, they might be a bit surprised.
Assume,
as well, because it's quite a different style to what they might be used to. So it's also in your benefit to maybe not put the grape on the variety or like the grape on the label as well.
Yes, of course. I make the wine in we can see natural style. I don't put anything, I don't filter, and I just put 20 milligrams of sulfite when I put in bottle and stop, nothing. And then I work hard on the vines to obtain the very good grapes. The characteristics of the wine, for me, enough equilibrate, because Sicily is a warmer region to make wine, but if you use your own grapes, the autochthon grapes, they have its balance. If you make the wine with international grapes, maybe you can have too much structure, but without freshness, the aromas is not so elegant like in other places.
The grape varieties that you're working, obviously we know Grillo, and red varietals or other white varietals as well?
Inside?
No, just in general, production.
In general, I have Nero d'Avola, a little bit of Syrah, Catarratto, Nerello Mascalese.
Okay.
Syrah is not autochthon, but in Sicily, there are good conditions for Syrah. There are many.
What do you think of this?
I find the smell really interesting. Mm. I've been trying to... It kind of reminds me of... makes it sound weird, tree sap.
Yeah, no,
like pine tree
that,
sap. Because it's sweet, but there's something really green.
Well, there is a sappiness, but it reminds me of like darker honey as well.
Yeah, also honey. Yeah. There's just something tree-like about it. I don't know if you remember, I'm a tattooer, so sometimes the stuff that comes out of my mouth is going to be a little...
When you drink it, in the nose, you don't feel that you have this strong freshness and saltiness, because the nose is warm.
Mm.
And then when you drink it, that the finish is very fresh, salty.
Mm-hmm. I love the smell. I think this would also be something I would definitely eat with. This would be great with certain foods. What would you pair it with? What do you like to eat with this?
What do you like?
To eat with this, if you were to drink it with food.
Nothing, just a drink.
Just a drink.
That's all good wine, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Just drink. That is the dinner.
For me, the best food for this kind of wine is something very, very salty.
Mm-hmm.
Baccalà alla pantesca, baccalà in Capperi, you know?
No.
Capperi.
With capers. Capers and salted fish.
Yeah.
This is very, very salty. Sardines.
Yeah. Just on the point of Grillo, like with the supermarket wine thing, but there, I think in Sicily, you do see a lot of young Grillo that's made in a particular way.
Yeah.
And it's quite sterile and sort of formulaic. It can almost be like a Pinot Grigio sort of style. And it wasn't until I went to Marsala and I visited Marco di Bartoli
about
4 years ago that I had a new appreciation for Grillo, like trying sparkling wines, still wines, obviously the sort of sweet and, and sometimes fortified wines. I really appreciated that grape variety for its ageability, for its complexity when it's made really well. And I think that's not necessarily talked enough about with this grape variety. But it's actually quite an interesting grape.
Special for white wine, if you work in a conventional way or natural way, the expression of the wine is totally different. So it's the same also for other grape variety. Because in a conventional way, if you work without oxygen, with technology, you have the stronger aromas of tropical fruit, for example, like Sauvignon, almost every variety grapes. The body is different, it's more thin. It's true for the Grillo, but it's true for all kind of the grapes. You work in natural way, our the expression are totally different, especially in the white wine is more. The red wine too, but white wine is another kind of wine compared to conventional wine.
I would agree with you. I think we all agree.
Yeah. Also, they use in conventional wine, they used to put more sulfite, for example, in the white wine, because you don't have the tannins to protect the wine, so they need more sulfite. And so are very different, very, very different equilibrium.
So when did you start making wine then? Since you were just, you sort of grew up with it?
2010, my wine.
Your own label?
Yes. Before, I worked for some seller.
Yeah.
And before, I make the wine in my garage by myself.
Awesome.
Yeah. Without knowledge.
I love it.
Then I go to the university, study winemaking, enologist. I start to work to big cellar, conventional cellar. And then I told that the wine I make in my garage before was better. And then I left the job and started making the wine in my garage again.
Yes.
And now I make 45,000 bottles.
Okay.
I started with 1,000.
Slowly built it up over the years. Yeah. Would you say that your style of winemaking or the way that you approach the grapes that you work with has changed at all since you started in 2010? Or would you say you sort of stuck to the way things began?
I died to start to make the wine like that. In the white wine, I changed something in the process, but the philosophy was a very natural wine. But, for example, you don't study in the book how to make a natural wine. They don't care. Who write the book don't care how to do a very good wine without putting nothing inside.
But so, do you think that working with conventional wines sort of taught you the up or what you didn't want?
In the book, you...
There's an actual book.
In the... In the knowledge book, you study what's happened if you do everything in the wine. If you put this, what's, then you choose how to make the wine. And the book is not written, you have to do the wine this way. But they don't care about how to make the wine without putting nothing inside.
Okay.
White wine, you have to filter, you have to clarify. This is the normal process.
So it's like cooking with a recipe versus cooking with
what's available from the market.
And
that
intuition
day.
And
it's like cooking a bag of bread or making a bread with sourdough.
Right.
Basically. You can buy grapes and you can buy all the products you need to make a wine.
And buy your own starter.
And you can,
or you can make it.
Make the wine easily. And it will be the same wine every year.
Right. Mm.
Or you can make a sourdough bread with the local wheat. And
your own starter.
And it will be a different bread you make in the morning and you make in the afternoon. It will never be the same. It's the same with natural wine. You need to adapt the grapes and the environment you are working in. I agree. It's the natural wines are made, you say, 50 or 90% in the vineyard. And the rest is in the cellar. But it's really a small transformation. You know, you need to have your primary products as the highest possible quality, otherwise you will never be able to make anything.
Otherwise everything you make with it is going to end up being super.
Because when you're into the cellar, the quality of the grapes become only less and less good. You know, if you're good, you keep the same level. But you can never go up. You know, winemaking is not about making things better, it's about processing grapes into being wine. And for me it's really not about making wines, it's more about following this process, you know. And if you think you can make something better, you have a false impression of what you're capable of doing, because winemaking is not winemaking. It's wine growing or it's wine following. But you can also make wine, but then you actually blend things that is not supposed to be blended,
right.
if you talk natural wine, in my opinion.
But. Well, even there is a company, have you seen that? I don't know if I sent it to you, called Endless West. And they're working on producing...
It already sounds like a cryogenic company.
It sounds awful.
Like cryogenics.
Yeah, and it's they want to produce whiskey without grain and wine without grapes.
What?
They're doing it in the US.
Oh, no.
It's absolutely insane.
That's
I mean,
bizarre.
Whether it's going to taste good or not.
No, the problem is that
really
if
criminal.
You want to make a lot of wine every year the same... without a risk, in conventional wine, they study how to do it. But for me, if you drink a very good natural wine and a very good conventional wine, the conventional wine seems the imitation of the natural wine. But it's too difficult to do every year in big quantity. Mm. So in this case, they use something to do. But for me, is a false, very similar, if you do very well. But it's not the original. For me, the great conventional wine, the inspiration is a great natural wine. But it's impossible to do in big quantity and every year. Mm. So they find a road to do it very good for the consumer. Don't know the original, they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
But when you know the quality of a natural wine and then you drink a conventional wine, you don't know why, if you are not experts, but your body says there is something strange in this wine. There is some aromas that maybe don't have to be there.
Yeah,
it's not perfectly linked to the grapes, and this don't happen in natural wine. But in the opposite, for me, conventional wine, great conventional wine are also for me an inspiration, because they are very clean, very perfect. Mm-hmm. And for me, with the experience, in the future you can do a natural wine also
very clean,
straight,
sure.
Perfect. Yes. This is my objective.
Right.
In this moment is young the process of natural wine. Mm-hmm. And so if you have some little mistake, it's okay.
Yeah.
Because better something true than something wrong.
Better and have the honesty than
the imitation of the truth.
Right.
I prefer the consumer in this moment to maybe say that. I prefer to drink vinegar and don't your false wine.
Yeah.
But in the future, I think that we will improve everybody in the process to make with the experience.
I think we were also saying, in terms of a flavor point of view, we talked about this before, didn't we? And we said that what we love about these styles of wines is that it's not just only fruit when you first try it. Sometimes there are off notes, but sometimes those off notes make the really pleasant notes more pleasant, and it makes it a little bit more interesting from a curiosity, tasting point of view, and an enjoyment point of view.
And I do think that generally consumers that gravitate towards natural wine are already the type of people that want, to try new things, that are excited about things not always being the same.
And open.
And open-minded to things maybe not always being as is. So, I think it would be nice to teach regular consumers that instead of having the same old every day that you know, like, don't reach for the bottle that you know exactly what it tastes like, but maybe try something that could be exciting, that you find, you know, takes you to a different place.
Yeah. Like a conversation with a person you didn't know before.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, take the chance rather than to always stick to the thing that you know, because you might be surprised.
The problem is that we used to drink conventional wine, first time try natural wine, and they feel something strange.
Yeah, totally.
Your body is in alarm. What is this? I never drink something like this, but I'm sure I can drink. Tomorrow I'm not sick.
And people generally feel uncomfortable when things are different too, you know? But it's like, embrace that feeling of not knowing. People, especially hardcore conventional wine drinkers, I think sometimes they just don't know how to feel about something that's a little different or tastes a bit wild.
Zone.
Yeah, they're totally out of their comfort zone because they don't have the language maybe to describe it, or they don't you know, maybe they see something that they would think is a fault in something else, but really it's an expression of something interesting in that wine, and suddenly they feel out of place. But yeah, I mean, that's why I like natural wine. I'm sure that's...
Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Yeah. Should we try the next one?
I was about to say.
Yeah.
We've got empty glasses on the table.
We're going friends now.
Oh, we're going to go back and forth.
Thank you.
Love the colour of this.
So, Anders, what wine are you pouring for us?
This is a wine from 2017. And a wine that... I need to explain the vintage of 2017.
So what's the name of the wine for our listeners?
Sedma. Légèrement serré, mais laissé complexe.
Okay, means, that's a... Non...
it's a very long name for a wine, probably, but it means this hand that was slightly squeezed too much left me with a, you know, feeling of a, you know, complexity, or, you know, left me, you know...
It's kind of a great segue from what we were just talking about, actually, in terms of sentiment.
You know, these guys, between men, there's always these guys that's squeezing your hand too much.
God, we met one of those at the pop-up.
Oh, my gosh, that guy.
He was crushing
pop-up.
Hands. Yeah, it was really, I hated him instantly.
But there's two versions. There's two versions of it, because there's this guy doing this, and you think when he's squeezing your hand, you think, what is he trying? Are we starting a battle now? Yeah. Or what's going on? But there's also these women that, when you try to say hello to them, they never, you know, no, the opposite. They keep squeezing your hand until you drag
all
it
away.
Up, and it leaves always, you know, this feeling of insecurity.
Sure.
And for me, the 2015 vintage was very, very warm, and it really left me with this impression of being squeezed a little too much. And when I experienced 2017 being not as warm as 2015, but similar in the heat and the dryness in the summer, no, we had not too much water. I was afraid that I would experience the same thing.
Okay.
So I kept up I started to make wines with a memory of 2015, this squeezed hand that left me a little out of my comfort zone. So it's actually the last red wine I made in the 2017, and it's a blend of Carignan and Chardonnay. Sorry,
Carignan and Chardonnay.
So it's we always, when we do red wine, we destem the red grapes by hand. So it's a small portion of grapes of Carignan, and a quite big portion of the juice of Carignan, and then the juice of Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a way to... Carignan is a grape that has a very thick skin, and if you want to, it gives easily a lot of color and a very rich wine. So if you want to do that, it's easy. If you want to make a more light red wine, as I enjoy making, but at the same time you like to find the structure of the wine.
Yeah.
It's difficult. So in this way, I put a few grapes and a lot of juice, and it gives me the possibility to make a long maceration.
Okay.
Without having a rich, tannic, overpowering wine.
Because this is very smashable.
This would be a perfect smashable red.
Yeah, totally.
And that's a category of wine that we categorise wine by how drinkable it is, and the ones that are most drinkable are called smashable. But with the Chardonnay grapes, is that a co-ferment then? So you're fermenting them on the skins of the Carignan with the Carignan?
No, it's only the juice of the Carignan. It's only the juice of Chardonnay.
Okay.
But with the skins of the Carignan?
Exactly.
So that's just sort of added in, co-fermented?
I always blend in the harvest.
Okay.
When I make wines, I really... I imagine that I'm cooking, actually. I have a background of... I'm educated as a chef long before I was sommelier and all these things. And still, when I make wines, I feel like I'm cooking. So we taste the grapes in the vineyards, and we harvest, and sometimes you feel you like some acidity from the grapes, and you want to follow this direction, or you taste some other grapes and they have another bitterness and saltiness maybe, and by mixing these things I construct the wines.
Bring the elements together.
Exactly. And that's all in the harvest after décuvage. When we do the pressing of the grapes, then it's finished. We never touch afterwards.
Okay.
We never blend, we never do anything, filtration or sulfur or anything. I really want, after the pressoir, to leave the wines to make their own story. Therefore, we have short windows, sometimes a few days for some wines. Sometimes we do maceration for 1 or 2 or 3 weeks. At this point, not more than that, but it means that we have only these few days or weeks to make the wine or to blend the grapes, if you want. And then afterwards, the wine has to make themselves.
Yeah.
You're like, it's your turn now.
Yeah, but it's, I like them to...
I think you see that in the wine. There's a purity in the wine here, and there's a brightness, and I think that's really nice that you... It's a really drinkable wine.
Yeah, totally.
Me. Very much like this wine.
Me too. I would definitely drink heaps of this.
What is your food pairing, Gwen? Because that's usually your question, so
actually,
I'm putting you on the spot.
I actually think that... I actually think that I would probably be happy... to drink this with
without
sort of,
food
but no, I was gonna say yes, but also with the sort of, because I date an Austrian chef, with the typical Austrian, like Jose, where they have just bread and some charcuterie. I think I happily do that, just some snacks.
What's it called? Jose.
I can never pronounce it properly.
It's
also like
it.
Dialect-y.
Jose.
I was thinking if you're saying anything in Austrian, just to like, whoa.
Her boyfriend does sound like Arnold Schwarzenegger,
like,
as well.
100%.
It's ridiculous.
I live with Arnie. Yeah.
Authentic.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, I think that's... But what would you then...
I don't know. I like in wines... it's hard when it's your own wine.
Totally.
Because you feel many things when you taste your own wines.
Yeah.
And you know the flavors so well because... before bottling, I taste the wines every day, especially up during the days up to where we, or the month, or the weeks up to when we bottle it, and really, I taste a lot. So the same wines over and over and over again. But when I make the wines, I always search for specific things. I like very much acidity and saltiness in wine, and therefore, it's flavors that I like to find when I taste them as well. In the south, we can easily make quite strong, quite fruity wines. So if you were to do that, it's easy. But to search for the other flavors is more again. When I feel these flavors are there, I like to put them even more in place. Yeah. So the same way, you know, I would go a direction of olives and salty fish, the salty plums, umeboshi.
Yeah.
These kind of food that are, in the same way, very floral and. Fruit,
but also
tartness to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe also that taro meat.
Yeah.
There is strong red, I don't like. White is difficult. You have to find the right. This one is.
I think tartar, actually.
Yes,
I feel you on that.
Yeah.
Because I think that sort of acidity that you get from tartar also would be like perfect.
The meat not cooked is a little bit sweet.
Yeah.
You need this acidity to...
Karen, you were saying that you had one at
a chicken liver parfait from chicory with blood orange.
Oh, I saw you post a picture. It's amazing.
I'm not joking. You cannot... The way he's done it is so fresh, the chef, because the chicory and the blood orange just make it so easy to eat. So you literally just pick up the chicory, you put on the blood orange, and you just... It's gone. It's gone in 2 minutes. And you're just, I'll have another one. And something like this would be great because it's very much like with the chicory and the blood orange, that sort of
but
sweet
I think that all
sour.
Kind of falls into the category of like the sort of meats and snickers.
No Chinese food pairing from you today?
No. No sweet sour pork today.
We're just laughing back at
some of the other, I think, sometimes because I live with a chef, I think about food a lot and what we would pair things with. And it's one of the things that we love to do at home is if he's cooking at home for guests, is I love to mix.
It's a great place to
match.
Be invited to dinner because he'll be like, what do you want to eat? And then he'll be like, do you want to eat this? Do you want to eat that? This is days before. There's a build up via text. And then he's calling you and sending you pictures of the ingredients he's going to cook. So
and because sometimes it's really like everywhere because he worked as a, he cooked Japanese food for years and he also does traditional Austrian. So sometimes you can come to dinner and it'll be a mishmash of all kinds of things. So actually for wine pairing, it gets...
And he loves wine, so we always have lots of bottles.
We definitely
on the table.
Go through
We're really spoiled. The best restaurant in town is their house. Except Barra, of course, where we are today. That's very delicious and very, very drinkable.
Totally.
Thank you.
Yeah. And for people who are, for our listeners that are in Berlin, is Holger Stocking all so far the two wines that we've tried?
Yeah, I think
everything we're trying is all at Vinicultur today.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, great. Where do we go from here?
We're going to go back? Shall we go back? We're going
to
jump back?
It's up to you guys. You know.
You guys know that.
We continue.
Okay.
We tasted a little bit before we came. We have to be honest.
That's why the bottles are half empty.
We guess. We're no detectives, but... Yeah.
We put two and two together.
You see the bottles half half empty. So.
It's a good sign.
This one is...
What's the name of this wine in the vintage?
Pure magique, pas de chimique.
That's a bit easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's translatable. It's
pure magic with no chemicals?
Yeah. It's it means... because it's a blend similar to what you see in the northern part of our region, where they used to, where they make Côte Coutie and Hermitage and all these things.
So this is Syrah and Viognier?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's, I work very closely to a winemaker called Gérald Dustric, and when we work, he likes to say all the time, it's my cheek, it's my cheek, it's my cheek, it's my cheek, okay. Because he's a very, he's a man that has a very easy to find joy, and he finds pleasure in many things, and when even the small things, he finds very magical.
Cool, sounds like a great guy.
He's a great guy, and he's a great winemaker as well, by the way, but it's another thing, but... So I find it funny to say this is just magic.
C'est magique.
This is just magic. It's no chemicals, like the same things you find 50 kilometers from where we are. So it's the same idea as the wine we tasted before. It's a blend of a white and a red, and the destemmed red with the juice of the reds, but also the juice of Viognier.
Yeah.
And. It's the same idea. I taste the grapes. The Syrah of 2017 was really spicy. Syrah can be like grinded pepper and really and almost impossible to even in the... In
can
the,
be tough, yeah.
Really tough. Even in the raw format as a grape, it really can be really intense. And on the other hand, we had Viognier that was maybe having a little lack of the structure because the white grapes, when it gets too warm in our place, they lose acidity very fast.
Yeah, then you get that blousy, quite flabby.
Yeah, over fruity, over floral things. For me, Viognier can be almost like a lychee, jasmine flower thing. And it can be nice, but it can also be without any direction.
We talked about this.
We talked about Viognier.
And Gwen was saying that you said that you struggle sometimes because you never know what you're going to get and you're constantly discovering things.
Because I feel like Viognier is sometimes really salty for me. So it's a weird that sometimes it can be really fruity and then sometimes it can be really saline. So I'm always a little, lost
but
with
But is a grape like that? It's,
I find it interesting, but...
It's a grape for me similar to Cabernet Sauvignon or... Gewürztraminer in Alsace.
Speaking my language.
You just placed the buzzword. That's her favourite grape.
No, but I like it. I started to like it because as a sommelier, I didn't like it at all. Because
that's why she hates it, I think.
It's so overpowering. Yeah, but it's so rich and it takes so much space when you... Yeah.
But I love natural Gewürztraminers because I think they can be really interesting.
Yeah, but I agree. But there's too few making this.
Yeah,
kind
I think
of,
it's
you
know. Super
that's what
special.
That's about tomorrow.
I know.
There's a couple of good guys in Alsace that makes beautiful.
Yeah, she loves Julian Meyer. And Listener was the other one you discovered recently.
Bruno Schüller makes a... And also... Stefan Banvat, he makes a macerated Gewürztraminer.
Because I love these macerated ones. They're almost like cocktails, you know? They have this sort of
really,
Negroni...
It gets a bitterness similarly.
And I love anything with a bit. We've also discussed this. I like anything with a bitter end note because it just makes it more. You want to have more and more of it.
I mean, maybe you're Italian. They like bitterness.
Yeah. Coffee,
loved when I went Negroni,
to
Campari.
That's my jam. I mean, that's my jam. I also love Italy. I go to Italy more than any other place.
So do I.
Yeah.
In Italian, we don't make strong coffee. We make coffee.
Yeah, there we go.
The other part, they make coffee with the water.
Most of the world, they make coffee similar to tea.
Our style is the coffee. Then there are...
Keep rolling on
okay.
this.
We could talk about the Gewürztraminer for another half an hour. Watch out. But your labels, I think it's worth just touching on them because even like when we got the delivery, and I had some magnums from Alex at Tuto in London at my last event. Mm. The last two events that I did, and one of the guys were like, the labels come off this wine because it does look a bit like a back label.
It is actually a back label.
Yes.
So the story short is that the first vintage I made, I wanted to find an artist that I like to work with.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't succeed in finding the right person in the beginning. So we decided just to put on the back label, write the name and put all the info, the legal stuff that needs to be there.
Yeah.
And then I thought one day I find the artist that I like and I put on the label. But then the wine started to taste good, and my bank manager, he's called me and said, we need some money to go into your account, otherwise this project, it will never succeed.
Mm.
So we started selling wines with the label, and I liked it.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Also, we were searching for something that was neutral in some way. I never give the wines the same name two times. I change the name all the time. I change the blend of the grapes and the vinification every year.
And sometimes the names are quite political as well.
Yeah. Sometimes they're quite political. Sometimes
some they're funny. Yeah. They reference music and different things. And
I like it like that. I like to. It's also, for me, the wines are a picture of we that make them in a certain period of life, and the names are the same. It's actually what I think or we feel or think inside, and we write it and we put it as a message. Mm. So I like to be able to have this volatility. I don't know, this easiness in changing the things.
Flexibility.
Exactly, yeah. All the time. And also, I like to have a label that fits into a wine bar or a nightclub.
Right.
And also a label that fits in a three-star restaurant.
Right.
So I don't want any naked women or stupid things written on my labels, because I think if I do that, I take my wines away from a place where they could be.
Mm.
Or I pre-dictate an impression of the wines that not necessarily is what the wine wants.
You kind of just want to let the wine speak for itself, rather than
that was my understanding of it. Like, for such a minimal label, and then you see the wines actually that, I mean this in a really positive way actually, that wines that have sort of minimal manipulation going on with them that really present the character of the grape variety of the vineyards without this sort of very sort of hand, like it's a, you know, without this very industrial, you know, like it's the opposite of industrial wine. There's zero marketing in that label, and that's what I like about it.
Yeah. Which is in itself its own type of marketing.
Yes.
But
for sure it is, but also, totally.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fascinated by labeling anyway, because I think it's a...
Yes, because
but you as an artist...
So that's something that I'm always fascinated, how the two things connect, or sometimes when you have winemakers that have very different labeling, say like Christian Chido, where you have one, you know, bottle that looks very classic.
With a bottle, label, you give a communication.
Totally.
So you give this communication, don't put the label.
And you,
I give my communication because I paint in the label something that I like to paint.
Did you paint yours yourself?
My girlfriend.
Oh. Cool.
Yeah. I tell her I would like to something like that.
Yep.
She paint, and then I
check that
I
you're
check
happy.
And,
so you're the artistic director,
together,
and then
yeah.
But that's the same.
Yeah.
I like that story
too,
very much because it's the same connection. Sometimes I think what you miss in natural wine is also that the labels becomes more and more, you know, wild and crazy.
Right.
And sometimes it's more the label selling than the wine.
Absolutely.
And when you say it's your girlfriend, or we do it in word, you know, it's not something artsy.
For me, it's important that the label communicates something about the wine. The beautiful label, but don't link it with the wine.
It's annoying.
But I think that's why I don't like. Where you have wines with totally different styling
many different
wines.
Many sellers give a graphic, do a label for me. Ah, beautiful this one. But the label is something that you want to communicate. Just you can do it. The idea, for example. Mm. Someone can help you to paint it or write it, but the idea is important that it is linked to the wine.
Sure. I think it'd be a very interesting experiment, actually, to label the same wine to
very opposite ways.
Do you
know what would be interesting? If you took the labels off the bottles, right, and you gave people the bottles blind, they tasted it, and then they had to match the labels up with the wine. I wonder how many people could get that.
We should play this game. We should. Let's do it. We'll do a...
Not a murder mystery. It won't be a murder mystery night. It'll be...
It was bottle number 5, label
number
2.
Sure,
in the bathroom.
It's for sure a good point, because if you drink a wine where you like the artwork on the label, probably it tastes nice.
Of course, it changes your perception.
But if it's like you're drinking wine in a room or in a restaurant where you don't like it, or with a couple of people that you don't like, the wine starts to taste bad. If you drink it
like today in a group of people, we enjoy our right. the company.
Sure.
The wine tastes better, and it will be the same with the label. There's some labels I really don't like what they do,
yeah.
and immediately I find properly this wine.
In this way, you don't have the risk.
Yeah.
I've tried many good wines.
Can't like
this,
like what I do. Scared yeah, about this. Someone don't like the label, don't like the wine, so don't want to risk.
That's it.
Okay.
I like about you though, for someone who works in, you're an artist, you're in, yes. you're designing and you're drawing and you're very talented at what you do.
Well, thanks.
But you're quite a risk taker with wines, because sometimes you buy stuff which has really shocking labels and you're like, I'm giving it a go. And
yeah.
I really respect her for that, because she's like, I don't care about the label.
I just like to try new things, so I just go for it.
So we've discovered some stuff that maybe I wouldn't usually pick up, if I'm honest. I would pick
totally.
Up on the shelf, and then I'm like, God, this is great. Where did you get it from?
Because I don't always look, I mean, the labels are interesting to me, but I don't think it's, mm-hmm. I try not to be swayed by them. It's more like, what is this? Where is it from? Who made it? Or why is it interesting? Tell me, and then I'll buy it regardless of how hideous the label is.
If anybody wants to write in on the worst and best wine labels
yeah,
that they've seen, feel
send
free.
That'd be great. I'm sure
we'll bring
someone.
It up in our.
We will have 15 posts by Wine from Bordeaux.
Yeah. There are some. Yeah.
There's some labels there.
Hmm?
There's some labels in Bordeaux that is there.
That's the fest. Pure Magique, Pas de Chimique.
Chimique.
I give up on French.
Le nom is longer than the description. Yes.
The second wine of yours, I'm just going to call it Pure Magique.
Yeah.
Pure Magic.
You're giving it a nickname.
It's lovely. No, it's lovely. It's really
Thank
pure,
you.
Bright. And again,
another
very
easy
smashable.
Drinker.
It's the second.
Pure Magique is the second.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also smashable.
Yeah.
I like this freshness because it's rare in our region and I find it interesting. The same you get in Sicily, you get the same, always the same freshness. In my opinion,
yeah,
you know better than I. But you know, some there's probably there are some producers that don't reach this freshness.
Yeah.
But what I taste from, I only drink natural wine or wine without sulfur and so on. So for me, I have a very limited range of wines that I can drink. I want to drink. I find pleasure in drinking. But from Sicily, it's the same. Even in many warm regions, when it's grown well and it's in the terroir and in the hands of a winemaker that know where to put the pressure in the vinification, you can find a very charming freshness. And that's what I'm searching for in our wines. It's really the same.
Definitely comes across.
Now the problem is that's the climatic change. For Sicily is not a big problem because we used to cultivate the grapes to resist to the warm and dryness in the summer, because a normal summer in Sicily stop rain in May and restart in October.
Okay.
So no one times rain in 6 months, 5-6 months. And so we plant the grapes also more distance, less plant per hectare. In the region, like in France, in the north of Italy, where in the summer rain a lot, maybe you put many plants. In this case, you can obtain a good maturation of the grapes.
Yeah.
But if it don't rain, then they are planted to survive to the wet.
Ah, so you're not crowding them, they have extra.
Yes, if a summer like this, in Germany, you know, they cut the grapes in August.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It
in Sicily, I cut the grapes in October. So incredible, the opposite.
Yeah, right, wow.
The opposite. It was very, very hot in the center of Europe this year. And we don't know what can happen, because it's very crazy, the weather, in the last years. But the warm, for the warm and dryness, we are not scared, because we used to cultivate the vines in this condition.
This is a really interesting smell. I really like the smell of this. It's like salade niçoise.
It is, actually.
Yeah.
Mayonnaise.
It's like tuna.
Salad cream.
Salad of tuna.
Yeah, it's like totally salad niçoise.
You never can drink two times the same wine. Also, if the label is the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also the fact you need to accept natural wine is a living thing.
Totally.
We talked about sourdough and cooking in this way, but it's the same with natural wine. You bottle a wine, and the top part of the cuve and the bottom part of the cuve or the barrel or whatever, it doesn't taste the same. When we bottle our barrels, we have maybe I say 2 or 3 or 4 of the same wine in barrels. But we don't mix the 4 barrels. We bottle 1, we bottle number 2, we bottle number 3, we bottle number 4. So what you get is different.
It's always a little different.
And the same with the bottles, they change, you know, during the period. And,
and
where they've been, what they've
been. And I think it's charm.
So this wine is
Nero d'Avola and Syrah together.
Mm-hmm. It's called Notte di Rosso. Notte di Rosso.
Okay.
This is 16.
Okay, so 2006. So this is the 2016 Notte di Rosso.
The 70% Nero d'Avola and 30% Syrah.
Syrah.
He fermented with the skin for 8 days, 3 hours and 25 minutes.
It's very precise.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many seconds?
Including lunch break?
Second, I don't remember, but tomorrow I can tell you.
No.
I can check in my book.
Your logs, Captain's log.
Yeah. He stays stainless, 80%, 20% in a chestnut barrel.
And is that your dog on the label there?
Hmm?
Is that your dog? What's your dog's name?
This is a picture when I make my first wine in my garage.
So this was a photograph then? What, your dog was trying to get in on the action?
Yeah. Snoopervising, I like to call it.
I make the wine in an open barrique, and I remove the skin manually, and the dog came there. And somebody take me a picture or...
Funny, because it reminds me of a dish that I've had, but I don't think it would go with it, but it reminds me of something.
What is
it? It reminds me of, in Venice, there's a pasta dish with onions, caramelized onions and salted fish.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminds me of this a little bit.
Doesn't sound like it's for the faint-hearted.
No, it's
dish.
Really good. It's just like the really thick, I forget what the pasta's called, thick with holes in it, but it's
like the
long.
Tubes, that's like big spaghetti, sort of, but with the, it's hollowed out.
Yeah, but it's quite thick. But it's just caramelized onions and either sardines or anchovies. It's really good.
Yeah.
And this kind of reminds me of it.
Yeah, the aromas in this moment is quite particular, quite strange.
Oh, I like it.
It's a long time that I don't drink 2016. And so for me, it's a surprise too. I like...
With your wines, for me, always feel very savory.
Yeah,
like less fruit, more savory, more herbal, always.
Yeah, because
herbal,
yeah, I was herbal exactly
really, there's a lot of, like, now it's turning more herbal.
A lot of berry, like aromas. In this case... there are other aromas.
But herbal is really, I really find this, I was, before when you talked about food, for me in my head I had, well, a couple of years ago, many years ago actually, I did a travel in Barolo area, and there's a lot of Italy tonnata.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Italy tonnata, yeah.
Tonnata. And you cut always this parsley?
Parsley.
So when you eat it, the first thing you have is parsley, green parsley, very aromatic.
Yeah, then you get the capers, then the tuna.
Then all these things in the meat. Yeah. And I find the same with this wine. It really has so many
layers.
That is a great quality for wine, is when you have all these layers of flavors.
Sandwich,
so it's like
fillings.
It's like you're digging into something and it keeps...
You keep wanting to go back to find out something else.
It keeps giving you something. That's, I think, it's really big quality for wine.
The fantastic things of the wines is that you can have... all kind of aromas inside.
Yeah.
Yes, you don't know why, but...
but rarely grapes.
Yeah. Also...
yeah, right. Everything but.
Every kind of flavor too. Huh?
Love it.
Yeah, yeah. It's very, very complex.
I would like to thank you both for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time, for sharing your wines as well. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, totally.
Pleasure.
So for anybody that's in Berlin... that is listening, you can find these wines at Vinicultur in Charlottenburg on Grohmannstrasse. But obviously the wines are found. You're selling in almost every market, aren't you? I know we have an audience in the US, Canada, the UK.
UK,
Japan,
no.
Now.
Couple of singles here and there, you know, one in Malaysia, one in
there is Thailand.
It's probably tattooers that I know.
I don't sell just in Angola and Kazakhstan, and they're everywhere.
Okay.
Wow, I love it.
So sorry if you're in those two places.
Get out of there.
Yeah. So thank you so much, and...
Yeah, cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers for joining us. Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.